up, nerds? Welcome to episode 25 of The Unwind, where we talk about tech, talk about games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
And I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
So I went to see The Kingsman this week.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I saw that. So it's funny because I actually saw it twice in 2 days because I told a friend of mine that I would go with her, and then this other girl wanted to go see it, and then so I had to go twice, and I didn't want to tell the first one that I was going, so I had to go see it again and pretend I hadn't seen it yet. But anyway, so it was not what I was expecting. Yeah. It was gratuitously violent for me, and for me to say that.
Wow. Okay, just one thing. Ridiculous. You know, for the benefit of our viewers, can you explain what it is? Not because I don't know what it is, because I totally know what it is.
It's basically kind of like a new spy movie. So I don't know. Josiah can probably explain it better than I can. I'm terrible at explaining things like this.
Yeah, it's like a new spy movie.
There you go. So nail on the head. So basically, I was really excited because the tech stuff that they use is really enticing. You know, he's got all this watch that can knock people out and like has all these weapons and stuff like that, and a pen that poisons people. And so it just was not, it was much more violent than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Which I guess the second time around when I saw it, I was expecting the violence and I think I enjoyed it more. Yeah. I think the first time, like the shock of it, like a guy gets split in half right in the beginning of the movie. And I was like, I was not expecting
Spoilers.
This at all.
Spoilers. Yeah, oh, seriously. It's the main character. He dies in 2 seconds.
But I didn't realize it was actually based off a graphic novel too.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with the graphic novel either, but it kind of reminded me, you guys might not know this movie because it's a little bit older, but The Big Hit.
No,
just kind of very stylized, violent movie, but kind of fun and kind of like a almost a black comedy, right? In that it's upbeat and kind of like a MTV video or something like that, except they don't show videos on MTV. But yeah, it was fun, and there are a couple scenes where they filmed the action kind of first person.
Yeah.
And that was kind of neat.
The action was really, really good. I think the choreography of the fight scenes and stuff was pretty impressive. Again, I love the tech stuff in it. Just was pretty shocking to me.
Yeah. Which viewing was better, the first or the second?
The second, by far. Like okay. I said, I think once I was expecting there to be...
Once you knew the lore and the greater understanding of the story...
Yeah, it also took me 2 times around to get all their British accents together. But anyway, let's get into the show. So I'll go with the first topic today. And I wanted to talk a little bit about... this quest of mine to become a cyborg. So, you know, digital wearable devices now are the big thing in tech, right? So you have smartwatches that are already starting to appear, and with Apple Watch coming out soon, it's becoming a big thing. You have the emergence of smart glasses. So you have, you know, Google Glass has been around for a while. Now you have Sony getting into the market. You have Microsoft with their version of it getting into the market. And fitness trackers are a huge thing now, Fitbit and... all these other
Jawbone.
Other wearables, yeah.
Yep.
So my question is,
and Microsoft banned?
Yes, of course. My personal favorite. So my question to you guys is, how much is too much? I mean, at what point? And along with that, I mean, what do you need to see to integrate these technologies into your everyday life? And you know, what's missing right now?
Well, I wore a Fitbit for about a year and a half. I've recently stopped wearing it because I, two reasons. One, it started to break, like physically break. Mm-hmm. And two, around the same time, I kind of misplaced the charger. I did a trip.
It's broken. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, on the back panel is the plastic is cracking and flaking off. And then, like I said, I misplaced the charger. So, I haven't worn it in a little bit, but I like the data that it gives me, you know, and you know, you can have this argument of, you know, does it make you healthier? Mm-hmm. I won't go as far as to say it made me healthier, but it made me more aware, and because I chose to be healthier, it helped me.
Sure, and that's all I can do, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't physically restrain you and make you work out.
Not yet.
but you know, that's an important distinction because I think some people believe that. I mean, I don't mean to make people sound super naive, but this idea that I'm wearing it so I'm doing more, it really is just a way to aggregate knowledge so you can better yourself. It's not
right.
Really about...
We talked about this last week with just datification of your life, right? Like getting all this extra information that you can then use to make informed decisions, to make better choices about your health, about your lifestyle and things like that, right?
Yeah, and the other piece of it is, you know, how accurate is it?
Sure.
So I used... for a while, I was using the sleep tracking on my Fitbit and also an app on my phone. So I placed my phone next to my pillow, that sort of thing. And it some of the data that it can track, specifically sleep tracking, is way different. Yeah. And what I kind of have come to accept is that, or the decision I've made is, I don't want all my data coming from one device. I used to think like, oh, I want a watch that does sleep tracking, that does pedometer, altimeter, all this stuff, heart rate, et cetera, et cetera. But something like the sleep tracking, I'd rather, I've seen an Indiegogo for this, basically it's a bed cover, like a sheet, and you just, that'll track your sleeping, and it's got dual zones and stuff like that. So as long as that can talk to a centralized hub, something like Apple HealthKit or maybe SmartThings or something like that, then I'm fine with having different devices in different areas for whatever it is I want to track. And hopefully those would be more precise because it's just for sleeping. It's just for fill in the blank.
Yeah, accuracy is definitely a big thing. And I don't think it's talked about enough because people just make this assumption that they're fairly accurate. I know the Wall Street Journal did a piece, I don't know, maybe a month ago or something like that, and they compared a number of devices, just a variety of devices, to actual devices like measuring heart rate and blood pressure and a couple other things, and they were wildly inaccurate. And recently, if you've read in the news, there was another Wall Street Journal report saying that Apple has scaled back some of their health ideas for their watch because they couldn't get good enough sensors to accurately measure a number of things they wanted to measure consistently. So there were all kinds of things that caused issues, like having hair, whether how tight the watch was on the wrist, all those things, which makes sense. Like, these are all issues. But it's one of those things that if Apple can't get it right, and it sounds like they were trying very hard. This was not like a side thing for them. It was part of HealthKit and things like that. But if Apple can't get it right, why do we have any inclination that, you know, companies making a $99 device that doesn't necessarily have experience in the market has accurate devices?
So let's take accuracy out of the equation. So let's assume the technology is there to make these accurate sensors for things like this, right? So what is it going to take? What features do you need to see in order to wear some kind of glasses that do X, Y, and Z? Wear some kind of wearable that track X, Y, and Z? What is it going to take for you to want to have those devices in your life?
So I think I mentioned last week I was reading this book called Demon. Mm-hmm. And I finally got to it's like the last 20% of the book. Spoiler. Where you finally talk about this this VR headset type thing that they have, or AR rather, with this heads-up display. And some of that stuff would be really appealing. You know, some of the stuff they talked about with Google Glass, so directions on the heads-up, so they're just kind of out of the way, but you can see them as you need it. Mm-hmm. Names of restaurants and stuff like that, pull up a phone number. Context would be really great, but I know it's a little creepy because to do the context, it'd have to be like facial recognition or some other biometrics where it knows your voice or something.
Sure.
So that would be a little creepy. I wouldn't necessarily want people pulling up my profile when they're looking at me. But for business purposes, it would be great to pull up people's profiles and names and that sort of thing. So I have mixed feelings on that. The other thing that I noticed with my Fitbit and some of the other stats that I was tracking, it's not just about collecting the data, but it's about having a good decision or advisory engine behind it. So, you know, something that's going to say, oh, well, you're at this many steps, not just walk more.
Right.
But, you know, if you do this much more activity and you keep it up, then you can expect to see this much weight loss over the next 2 weeks. That sort of thing. So contextualize the data and make it real to me.
Yeah. So that's actually where Microsoft Band has fallen short for me, is that it's great to know how many steps I've taken, you know, accuracy or not, how many steps I've taken, how many calories I've burned, you know, how long I've been working out, things like that. But without the next step, right? So it's like, okay, I know that I had a horrible night's sleep last night. What can I do to make it better? You know, is it because I ate too late? Is it because I went to bed too late? You know,
right.
What are some of the recommendations? How do I improve my life, right? So that's what's the big piece that's missing for me right now, is the recommendations or how, you know, what the next step is beyond just tracking this data.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. I think even like that question in a way is flawed, because to me, it should be in reverse, where I figure out what I need and then go get something that measures that. So many of these devices give you all this information you don't know what to do with. And, you know, I don't know the point of having any of this information. Mm-hmm. So for me, say I wanted to, you know, accurately count calories, then I would decide, look, I'm going to go on a diet where I reduce the amount of calories
right.
I eat
right.
and then find a device that can properly do that. Mm-hmm. So unless there's something where they literally tell you what to do with this information, I would do it in reverse. I would say, you know, I want to start doing 10,000 steps a day. So now I'm going to get a step tracker or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So do you guys see the hype of the next device is, you know, the fitness, health, like you said, that arena. Do you think it'll really take off? I mean, clearly it's not going to be, you know, smartphones. I don't think it can ever reach that. But do you think it's going to be a significant viable market, not something that kind of tapers off?
I think it will, honestly, because I think that's just an overall craze, not just in technology. I mean, that's kind of what's going on in culture right now, right? Is this desire to be healthier, to lead healthier lives, to be more active, things like that. And I think also the price of these devices going down as well. I mean, you have, you know, you're not shelling out $700 for a smartphone device, right? You're shelling out $100 like for a Fitbit or something like
right.
that. It's very, very affordable for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think the price is a big thing because, you know, even in my job, so the thing we talk about all the time is we need to collect data, right? So this is not like fitness data, but it's just data about our industry, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can look at it and start to make good decisions and saying, oh, is this service that we offer well-priced or is it worth it to do it because what's our ROI, that sort of thing. You can't answer those questions until you have the data. And so when it comes to, you know, personal fitness tracking, you can't answer those questions until you have the data. And that's mm-hmm. where these cheap sensors come in. So I got my heart rate all the time rather than just when I go to the doctor or, you know, inaccurately
right.
recording it with my fingers on my pulse or something like that. When I stop working out, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, so when you have that data, yeah, I think that's the next step, to make good decisions or informed decisions based on that data. And a big piece of that is getting it, getting the data cheap enough, and accurate enough, as we started talking about earlier.
And one demographic that constantly gets neglected in this area, because it's so much of the focus is on, I don't know, younger people or people who want to get in shape and things like that. This arena would be a boon to people with chronic mm-hmm. conditions.
Oh, yeah.
Who
absolutely.
Need to.
Clearly, yeah.
They absolutely require the data. This isn't like an addendum to what they're doing. This is necessary. Like diabetes is probably the biggest, best example
yeah,
of it.
Exactly.
If they need to record it multiple times a day, if they can have some system that's mm-hmm. easy to record, and they're getting a lot better, you know, there are systems where you don't have to prick your finger
yeah,
to
right.
get your readings.
And that's really interesting because, you know, so far and currently, the reaction has been to medicate it, right, with pharmaceuticals
mm-hmm. sure.
and that sort of thing, because we know it's hard to change people's behaviors. But if we get the data and the feedback loops needed to really change behavior, then maybe we can rely less on pharmaceuticals to be healthier for certain chronic diseases. So it's pretty interesting. I look at it as a positive thing. But then, you have that whole cyberpunk mentality
yeah.
too, where people are hacking brains
implants,
and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Stuff like that.
That could be, that's down the road, I think. But
Well, I mean, hacking isn't too common nowadays. You
yeah.
know, we've pretty much eliminated.
Not gonna
it.
Lie, it's I also total... wouldn't mind an Iron Man suit. So,
so let's slide into the next topic. Still talking about smartphones, but maybe using them in a different light, other than fitness tracking or being that central hub of data collection. So the
cat videos, no?
Well, yeah, clearly cat videos are always going to rule the use of digital technologies. But I was thinking about digital payments recently.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rob, I know you have an iPhone 6. So have you used Apple Pay on your iPhone yet?
I have not. I and it's funny because I don't really have a good reason.
Yeah.
Like I'm not really afraid to put my credit card information and stuff into it and, you know, other information.
And it's safer than swiping. So.
Right. So like I don't really have an excuse yet. I think I'm afraid of going to try to use it and then wherever I'm at just not taking it.
Yeah.
You have that awkward situation.
Yeah,
I swear I have money.
So I saw this article saying that I think it was Staples and a couple other, you know, brick and mortar companies.
Mm.
They said that Apple Pay, because you can use Apple Pay to buy things in their apps as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that Apple Pay was the number one way that people paid in the last few months.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's
did, the did they separate in the app versus using NFC in the store or?
Yeah, I think it was specifically in their app. So you you know, when you go to the logout process, instead of saying, okay, type in my password on the phone.
Yeah.
You just press your thumb.
It looked really
cool.
So
the apps have to enable that. But
I'm just trying to think of when I would actually use it. I mean, I buy like 90% of things online.
But do you use your phone?
No.
Okay.
I use PayPal for like most of my purchases, right? And then, I mean, besides like gas, besides going to the grocery store, which I don't know. I don't think Stop and Shop takes Apple Pay yet.
But you'd be, well, I don't know about Apple Pay, but one thing people didn't realize, how many places had NFC readers you didn't even realize.
Yeah, yeah. So if they have NFC, chances are it will work with Apple Pay. They just haven't done the training on it and that sort of thing. And they don't have the little sticker on it that says, but McDonald's takes it, Whole Foods, I know.
I've heard a situation a lot of times where people will try to use it and the cashier does not understand what they're doing.
That's what I'm terrified of. I'm a little bit socially awkward, so I'm just terrified of having that conversation and be like, it's money. Like,
they think you're hacking into McDonald's right now. It's like those old movies where they put the little thing up to the pad code and then it just completely just destroys the pad code.
The system shuts down.
Yeah. Just hack in.
Beyond Apple Pay, though, I mean, obviously there's Google Wallet, and you talk about rising tides lifts all boats. So, you know, after Apple Pay came out, Google Wallet said that they started seeing an uptick in people using Google Wallet as well. So, Sean, have you used Google Wallet with any of your phones?
No. So, the reason why, so Google Wallet, I haven't used Google Wallet yet, but the reason why I have a hesitance is because there are a couple other issues that Google Wallet has. And this is, I don't know everything about it, but when Apple Pay was announced, one big thing is they talked about how they're integrating with banks. And actually, when I first heard that, I didn't understand why that was a big deal. I just assumed everybody did. My understanding is the way that Google Wallet works currently is that it's a separate account and you essentially will connect your bank account to it, but you add money to it and then it debits from that account. It doesn't go directly. I haven't actually used it. So if it's changed recently, I apologize. I might be wrong, but that was the kind of thing that told me it's just too much management.
Yeah, it's just more of an escrow account, kind of like PayPal.
Kind of, and I don't actually know why at this point. And just as a history, Google has had a number of issues because despite having incredible market share, they don't have the same power that Apple does. They initially tried to put out Google Wallet with the Nexus 4, but none of the carriers would allow it. So the Nexus 4, they had to strip it out. They actually tried to do the, what is the thing called, the secure chip? I forgot what they call it in the iPhone, but they did this. They were trying to do the same thing where they store it, but they couldn't do that because the carriers pushed back, and they had their own system called SoftCard. It was actually initially called ISIS, had to change it to SoftCard.
What's wrong with ISIS?
Yeah.
That's a great name.
SoftCard has its own bevy of issues, and no one wants to use that. But now, hopefully, Apple will kind of allow Google Wallet to push in. But either way, just pushing that all aside, I assume, most people had no idea what Google Wallet is. I mean, most people don't even know NFC readers were around.
Yeah.
So my assumption was, Apple's doing this push. It's going to be big now. And maybe it is bigger than I haven't been reading about it, but I feel like I don't really know anyone who's used it. I really thought people were going to start using it. I mean, it's so easy. You just put your thumb or whatever your finger on and you can pay. Yeah. Like, not everybody knows this, but it is safer, as far as I know, than swiping with the magnetic strip can be copied a lot easier than.
Josiah, have you used it at all?
I don't have it. I have a 5S, so it's not on my phone. But
you have the Touch ID. Oh, it's only on the 6?
Yeah.
Oh, but because NFC.
Because of the chip.
Sure.
The secure chip and the NFC.
But you can buy stuff online, right? Because that doesn't require any of that.
No, it still needs that secure chip or whatever for your fingerprint reading. I don't know. I think you probably could do the purchases through the phone without NFC, but they haven't enabled it, which is fine. That's Apple's way. But you bring up a good point about the magnetic strips and the availability of NFC. So I think the other big piece of this is there's some legislation that says I think later this year all companies have to, not necessarily have to have the that chip and pin reader. And so they're
really,
so yeah, but if, I mean, all the cards that you have, so you should be, if you haven't already, all your credit cards and debit cards should have a pin, mm-hmm. by the middle of this year sometime.
I mean, a chip.
I'm sorry, a chip. and so the law says that the weakest link, that is, in a chain of, fraud, so credit card fraud or debit card fraud, the weakest link will be held responsible for paying back those fees.
Really?
So that means if your local stores don't have a chip and pin reader, and somebody steals your card and uses it there, and they just swipe and they don't have to use a chip and pin, and that's why they didn't get caught, then that local store will have to pay, will have to refund you whatever was fraudulently charged. So with that in mind, I think that a lot of stores, even mom and pop stores, are going to have to go out and either lease or buy new credit card readers very soon if they're, you know, aware of the law. And that, you know, they'll probably buy something bundled with NFC. So that'll probably start to change drastically this year. And then the other thing that you mentioned with the magnetic strips is that you may have heard that Samsung bought LoopPay.
Yeah, yeah, so, LoopPay looked interesting.
So they're basically spoofing the magnetic strip. It's a case that you can buy which has a card that you can pop out of the case, but it basically memorizes your credit card information in a magnetic strip, and it uses a magnetic pulse to basically spoof your magnetic strip in the reader. So you don't have to slide your phone through the reader, but you just point it at there, you get it close enough, and it seems like NFC, but I think it's not as technically secure.
And just to be clear, the one major advantage of LoopPay is it works with any credit card reader. Like, right. You don't need NFC built in because the reader thinks you're swiping a card, essentially.
Correct. But I think because of that new legislation, the NFC readers will be much more prevalent over the next year, if not 2 years, as other stores start to figure this out. But it's interesting. So I can't use it right now because of my phone. Rob hasn't used it, even though he can. And Sean has chosen not to use it because Google Wallet is not as easy as he wants it to be.
And, you know, honestly, even if it worked properly, I will say the genius of Apple Pay is the fact that you use your finger. It's not that hard. The way Google Wallet works is you type in your PIN and then it'll authorize. So it's not that hard to type a PIN, but it is a lot easier to use.
Someone chops off my finger and steals my phone, Sean. Yeah.
Then we'll make a cast of it.
And, you know, of course, the sleepers out there are other app-based things like PayPal. We use PayPal to pay each other back all the time. Yeah. Square has a similar feature.
Snapchat, and, sending money to yourself. Yeah, Snapchat,
actually, you're right. And even in Google, in Gmail, you can email cash to each other and just straight through Gmail on the web.
It's like it's so easy to send money now, of all things. I don't know.
We just need to make more money.
So yeah, Snapchat, but the snaps he sends out is worth a pretty penny. All right, so we have a new segment that we're going to do in replace of our question break. Which is in this month's Loot Crate, we got a card game called Super Fight, which essentially you get two cards, one card being a character, creature, monster type, and then the other one being an ability, weapon, etc. And you have to make an argument, a quick argument, about why your set would win in a Super Fight.
I win.
All right, so I'll go first. I have Dr. Horrible armed with a surface-to-air missile launcher.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So, it's Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, come on. Like, he's the man. He wins.
Wait, who's Dr. Horrible?
Oh, Sean.
Oh, no. Wow.
You're out. You already lost. It was a miniseries. A miniseries, I guess, is the way to say it, right?
Yeah, it's a web-based miniseries that came out by...
A web miniseries I'm supposed to know about?
Whedon. And the Whedon Brothers amazing. Produced it.
Oh. You've lost all credibility.
Was
in
it. It was during the...
Yes.
It was during the writer's strike.
I was confusing. I didn't know if it was Dr. Horrible or Dr.
Dr. Robotnik?
No, what was his first show? He was a doctor. Wow.
Oh, Doogie Howser?
Doogie Howser, yeah. No matter who it is.
Did he turn into Dr. Harris? Okay, so... Yeah, it's a sequel to it.
All right, so flip your cards.
Hold on, I gotta make my argument.
No, flip the cards, and then we'll argue. That's the rule. Come on, flip the cards.
Okay, go ahead.
Keanu Reeves.
You're lost.
Can only be killed by a shot to the head. And by the way, by Keanu Reeves, it means the many Keanu Reeves that are in his movies. So it's not just human Keanu Reeves.
I have the Iron Giant using a blank as a club. It says, draw a random character card. I'm using Sandy Cheeks as a club. So I think the Iron Giant wins.
Get out! You have no argument.
If you actually watch Dr. Horrible, you realize that he makes a series of blunders, and he, as smart as he is and as amazing as he is, he never actually executes on his plans. Even when he was accepted into the League of Evil, he did it by accident, basically. So,
okay, but he was accepted into the League of Evil. He's a maniacal genius. He's Neil Patrick Harris, and he has a surface-to-air missile launcher, which means he can take all the satellites. He can shoot Keanu Reeves in the face with a missile, and he can just take out the Iron Giant.
Wait, is that considered air? I guess he's tall enough to hit him. Can't hit me. Surface-to-air, it'll just miss.
He'll just
Even if you hit him, though, he's gonna fall on you. So it's a tie at best.
He would blow up.
And then I win. One word. Neo. That's what's going to happen.
That's all in his mind.
That's what's going to happen.
That's in the Matrix. So
yeah, and you guys are in the Matrix.
Iron Giant just pulls the plug on the Matrix. He steps on the Matrix.
If you guys had Agent Smith, maybe you could equal me. But, you know, he's just going to jump around, do his little...
I don't think that translates in audio.
Whoosh, whoosh.
All right, who's your vote for?
Me.
He has Kung Fu.
You can't vote for yourself. Come on.
Keanu Reeves.
I'll go Iron Giant.
Iron Giant.
Exactly.
Oh, damn it.
What were we going to do, a three-way tie?
Yeah. All right. No, we're not doing this anymore.
Wait. Although, I don't know, you know, Keanu Reeves and the Iron Giant might be the nicest people ever, so they might have to fight over that.
Change your vote.
And Sandy Cheeks, I don't know what that is.
Change your vote.
Then there will be no decision.
No, take-backs. Moving on.
Next all right, you really wanted to vote for yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, because mine was clearly the best. It's Neil Patrick Harris.
You love him, don't
you? He's
amazing. So, getting on to our third and final topic, I wanted to talk about differentiation in software in kind of smartphones, laptops, and things like that. And what I mean specifically in terms of differentiation, I mean kind of skinning. So
I'm pretty sure this is your favorite topic.
Why?
You love talking about this.
Well, it's actually more contentious than you would
think.
I think
it's also because you get a new Android phone every month.
No. So it's actually... So my point might not be what you're thinking. So so one interesting thing to know about... So what I mean by skinning is, in Android, you see this issue. Well, some people consider it an issue, some people don't, where each manufacturer will change Android in a specific way to make it look some way. Samsung has TouchWiz, HTC has Sense. They all look different. You see Windows Phone, they're different manufacturers. Well, now it's like one. But they are different manufacturers, and they're all the same Windows Phone software. Right. The only differentiation is they can add their own apps. Yeah. And then the iPhone, obviously it's made by Apple. There are no other manufacturers. Then on the same level, you talk about laptops and things like that. With Windows, it's all the same software. The only differentiation is the hardware. Mm-hmm. Apple, you know, same thing. There's only one manufacturer, so it's only one. Linux, it's a little bit confusing. There are a lot of distributions, mm-hmm. so you could kind of argue that there are different skins, but I don't know. Linux is a little bit confusing one. But the one issue that I really want to get into is, so a lot of people, a lot of purists, myself included, feel like the best version of Android is Google stock Android. The reason why is not... It's more because other companies don't know how to make good software rather than... I mean, Google knows how to make good software, but it's more deficiencies on the manufacturer's part. And a lot of people argue, you know, what if more of them went to stock Android? But you keep seeing more and more situations where companies, the Nexus line, which is stock Android, doesn't sell particularly well. You could argue they're not marketed in the same way and things like that. But there are other devices that have actually gone with stock Android, and they don't sell in tremendous numbers. And there are people who genuinely like the skins on the Samsung phones. People buy it for that reason. So my question is, from a marketing standpoint and a real... You know, if you were a phone company or a laptop company, assuming you could do this, would you skin your product? I mean, the obvious point is to make your thing stand out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But some people argue that it takes away so much from the device that it's not worth it. So would you?
Yeah, it's tough call, right? Because strategically, it makes sense to say that you have to differentiate your product. And if you're buying the hardware from, you know, maybe two or three different suppliers, OEMs, then ultimately it's going to be the software and the user experience that differentiates your product. So, you know, that makes sense to me. With that said, you know, I would go crazy. And actually, I did to a point. So when I used to buy PCs, you know, you'd have all the crapware from HP and Dell and Gateway, which was big when I was still buying computers, PCs. So, and that's one of the things that pushed me to just make my own computers, right? Mm-hmm. So I could put Windows on there and then skin it the way I wanted to, change the start chime and the background and all that stuff to what I wanted it to. And I think we talked about this a little bit in a previous episode. That's one of the main reasons why I prefer Apple, because it's just I can pick up anybody's Apple phone and support them on it because it's all basically the same. Whereas if I, you know, in the work that I do, if somebody had a Samsung tablet versus an HTC tablet or a Moto X tablet or something like that, you know, I'd have to like stop and think about, okay, where are the settings here and where are the settings on that one. So I prefer kind of one ring to rule them all. But with that said, it makes a lot of sense that these companies have to find something to differentiate besides design and hardware.
I think I'm in the same boat. As a consumer, I think I would rather just see one unified platform, right? So like with Windows, it's always been the case that if I bought, you know, some computer with extra Dell software or HP software, whatever, I've always deleted it. Like I've never used it, right?
Yeah. But you didn't use Music Match and McAfee for 3 months.
And you know, the two phone platforms I've used, you know, being Windows Phone and iOS, that's never been an issue. So I've never really used an Android phone as my main device. But from a business perspective, I think to Josiah's point, you kind of have to. I mean, you kind of need that differentiating factor, unless your hardware is just so good that you could sell it on its own.
Right.
Well, so I actually really wanted to bring you into this because I thought, so I think it's pretty, I think most people are on the side that bloatware is something people don't generally want. There, I mean, it's a mixed bag because some people do really like the software, like, you know, AT&T has Navigator software, even though Google Maps is free. Right. Some people really like using that. But generally, I don't think it's hard to convince people that bloatware is a bad thing. I think one difference that is kind of an unspoken thing that helps Android. So, Rob, you were at one point with your Windows phone and you had an upgrade. And the thing is, one thing that Windows Phone did really well was that all their phones were incredibly smooth. Even the low ones, they would take longer to load, but they were really smooth.
Yeah.
And you got to a point where you really asked yourself, why do I need to upgrade? Because honestly, if I upgrade, it's going to look the exact same because I'll get the update.
Sure.
It'll go smooth.
Hold on. But I should also point out that Windows Phones, the hardware, are not substantially better. Generation.
Well, let's pretend for a second that they are equal.
Okay.
And then there's, so obviously the advantage is you can get a better camera, maybe NFC or something like that. And I feel like one thing that Android has is it's almost this artificial differentiation where people feel like they're actually getting something different because you're getting a different thing. Because people think an HTC phone is different than a Samsung.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you say that, though, because don't you always put stock Android on your phone?
So here's the thing, though. I'm kind of taking myself out of the equation. And also, Android has changed significantly.
Sure.
If you look at Gingerbread, which is 2.3 versus kind of ICS or Ice Cream Sandwich Jelly Bean Kit Kat, which is 4.0 and plus, and to Lollipop now, I mean, you wouldn't even recognize that they're the same OS. Kind of like how Apple has changed in iOS 7 from 6 and before that. Windows Phone has kept the same aesthetic. There are definitely going to be significant changes in 10, but the thing is, well, they're adding hamburger menus. They're changing the top. It is going to be different. But either way, they genuinely think that they're getting a different operating system, different kind of phone when they upgrade because they see it as this is a different skin.
Right.
So I'm getting something completely different.
Right. But I've done that every Windows Phone. Like I bought Windows Phone 7, then I bought a Windows Phone 8 device, and now if Windows Phone 10 came out, I buy that device. So the issue is that Windows 10 has had this big gap between, like, 8.1 didn't change a whole lot. Like, it didn't change
the... Yeah, it's not a difference between Windows on a Windows Phone operating system. It's a difference between HTC Windows Phone and Nokia Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. That's the piece, right? Because there is no skin to speak of with Windows Phone.
Right.
So, you know, but I mean, this argument of what's the value of a skin, and you can kind of make this case that the skin is important. If if it didn't matter which HTC or Nokia phone or whatever you bought as far as Windows Phone goes, because they're all the same. And I think that's why Samsung and some of the others dropped out pretty early on.
And I think so. Yeah, I was kind of digressing a little bit. But one issue also is that for years, Android has looked really bad, especially in the beginning. Android looked really bad. Gingerbread did not look good at all. And Sense looked beautiful. So having a skin was definitely a factor.
Yeah.
And there are genuinely there are a lot of people who like, you know, with Samsung, I've had friends tell me they love how big the icons are. They don't use these words, but they love how garish the colors are. And they love how many toggles there. Our friend just got a Galaxy Edge and there are 20 something toggles on there. I don't even know how you use it. But one thing is, so Android, even before Lollipop, it was even with KitKat, which was supposed to be a good version of it, I liked it, but it was very cold. It really wasn't that good. Lollipop is the first one where I can definitely say, this looks really good. I like the direction they're going in. They actually have style to it. There's still things that need to be changed, but that is something that can stand on its own. I could definitely see how people would not like stock Android over the Sense skin or the Samsung skin or something like that. And I think there are two parts to it. I think people genuinely, I think this has helped Android. Mm-hmm. This sense of differentiation, even if it's not really there, even though you're still on Android,
even though you go back to stock every time. What? So let me ask you,
I'm not counting myself because I clearly know, like, for me, I'm elitist, so I like stock Android. But that is the point. That's why they're only Nexus devices. They don't sell very well. People want the, but Android devices in general sell tremendously well.
Sure. I mean, you probably don't know this, or else you'd probably be working for them. But like, what would be something that you would want in a skin that would make it good enough for you to keep?
So it's literally, it's not, it's almost not what it does. It's taking away all the, or what doesn't it do? The problem is, so I have an LG G2, right? Mm-hmm. And I had its skin. I could not tell you how annoyed I was. The starting point is they have this goofy ringtone that they have from the Vienna Boys Choir, whatever, you can change your ringtone. But I was like, why would you want this to start? So that's silly. Then also notifications is really important to Android. That's like the central part of it. And on the notification screen, 50%, and I kid you not, 50% of the screen is taken up by toggles on the top, and then this brightness bar, and then another bar, which is so, it doesn't make any sense, and having all these buttons everywhere. And then they overdo so many things. The icons look really bad because they're kind of skeuomorphic, and I get why they're trying to do it because Apple did so well with it, but they don't look that good. And then you just have, then of course, on top of that, you have all the bloatware. I switched to Lollipop and I'm so much happier with it. And one reason, though, also is because Lollipop genuinely looks good. They have animations. It's colorful. I actually, to be totally honest, and this is not Google bias, out of the three big players, I like the material design direction better than the other two. Better than flat. I don't know what it's called, but the flat design in iOS now and Metro, or whatever they call it now, modern design in Windows, which I actually really like Metro in general, but I like where material design is going. But anyway, my point being is it's just that they do so many things wrong. They do so many things that intrude on basic tasks that make it harder to use your phone as a normal phone. And they use it as features. And I think some people really like those features. I really find it more difficult to use my phone because the features just get in the way.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and on Stitcher. Definitely share us with your friends. Leave us your comments. Submit questions and topics. You can go to theunwind.audio, which will send you to our commenters block site. If you haven't got enough of our voices, you can listen to our 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons podcast, which you can also find on commenters block called Roll to Hit. If you have any comments about becoming a cyborg, digital payment, you agree with me that I should have won the super fight. Paris, or skinning, definitely love to get your comments and check us next week. Thanks for listening.
Bow out.